Is Matthews going to keep that mustache all year? That's the most important question we have for you. What do you think?
You know, I got to tell you, he was in a really good mood yesterday. And you see, the thing about him that I'm really beginning to recognize is he's got a little bit of like a mischievous slash rebellious streak to him. But it's not in what he says. It's what he does. It's like, you know, he throws on that red jacket and he just loves to see the reaction to it last year. I think that he's loving the reaction to all this. He likes that it's, you know, I think he just kind of smirks and smiles at all of the social media of it all. I think that now that he knows it's driving people crazy, I think it increases the chance it stays. That's my personal opinion.
Well, he doubled down by using Just for Men to darken it, making it look thicker. So I agree with you. I think it's just a thing that he's going to ride out until he finds something else that piques his interest. What's the latest on Marner? Have we heard anything new?
I don't know if Just for Men thickens it. I think it just makes it look younger.
Well, it thickens it if it gets the baby hairs, the baby blonde hairs.
You're thinking of Propecia.
No, because it shows the blonde hairs, like the little thin guys get darker.
I think it's the Jose Theodore stuff that he used a decade
ago. Yeah, there's a guy who's never seen the need to use that. I don't know exactly if you're correct.
Yeah, no. I'll defer to men on this one, I guess. So I'm not exactly lining up to darken my leg hairs. So
I mean, there's
there's
high-def cameras on Elliot four times a week. He can't move without hiding.
Yeah, there's no hiding from that.
Yeah, it's like Sid's gel, really, at the end of the day.
Oh, is that what he uses?
Is that what we're calling it?
I don't know. It could be like some kind of a chicken grease of some sort. I don't know. Something. Marner. Yeah.
Yeah, Marner. I mean, you know, the only thing I've really heard in the past couple of days is maybe I wonder if they're looking. I think I mentioned back in the spring that I thought they might end up looking at a 2-year deal. I wonder if that's been put out there. I think that there's a lot of frustration. I don't think they're that close. I think they've been talking 3-year deals. I don't think they're close. You know, the problem with the 3-year deal, from what I understand, is it's a big number. At least the ask on the Marner side of negotiations is the third year is a really big number, and for that you have to qualify him. After that, and at a really big number, and then it walks him right to unrestricted free agency. And I don't think the Leafs are interested in doing that at all. So I think that's the hold up there. I think Toronto's got a 7-year, has proposed 7 years, probably around $11 million. And at this point in time, it's not getting it done. And so we sit and we wait. I think that we just see we wait for a breakthrough here, one side or the other.
Do you ever see a scenario? Elliot Friedman, our guest, by the way, from Chicago. And a reminder, Tim and Sid have great coverage from there, from Chicago at Media Day, second Media Day of two, today at 5 o'clock, with lots of stars involved. Do you ever see a day when the CBA opens up again, and we'll get to that in a sec, the CBA opens up and, Elliot, after your first deal, RFAs are arbitration eligible? Does that benefit the player more than the team? The team gets the player, and it's a dangerous game to play for teams. But this year alone, 40 players filed for arbitration, which tells you that, and those aren't RFAs, but it tells you how difficult it is sometimes to get a deal done, and it forces a deal one way or the other. Baseball had it work for years like that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the possibility of it. I don't know if I see that happening right now. Like, their meeting today in New York, as everybody kind of knows. And, you know, I think they're talking about the possibility of I don't know if you call it a 3-year extension or a new 6-year deal. I think that's kind of the whispers we're hearing about if and when they get this done. But I don't know if we're going to see those kinds of issues tackled here. So if we're talking in the future about something like that, it might not be for a while. Now, I think we have kind of have, unfortunately, we kind of have to let this breathe and see where this goes. But I could definitely see, generally teams hate arbitration. They like to stay away from it, Greg, but I could see that to get to a point where it's more preferable to the club than it is what than this is.
Like, the players hate it. The players say they hate it too, right? It's you're kind of cut to the bone with criticism, and you didn't do this and you didn't do that, and our team didn't do that. That would like yeah, it severs take, it severs relationships.
Yeah, you take it very personally. But historically, arbitration financially has been better for the players than it's been for the teams in most sports. I think if you look back at the history of baseball, they will tell the players and the owners will tell you, as they did when I covered it, that arbitration was a much bigger win for the players than it was for the owners.
And is that something that we kind of, I guess, forget? Like, we want to hate the owners so much, so they get one thing that was on their list, and the players maybe get three things that they get to check off that was pertinent to them. But because the owners are just like the big, bad, rich owners, we seemingly hand them the W and the players the L.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think for a long time in hockey, the players were getting the better of the CBA. I mean, if you take a look at, you know, if you go back 20 years, Ashley, to 98, you'll remember that, you know, the players, the owners extended the CBA for to get the players in the Olympics for Nagano, and the players smartly accepted. And that was a huge win for them. They were, you know, that's basically what led to the lockout in 05-06. The owner said, we have to change the system. We have to get a cap in. Now, I think the last couple times around, I think it's been better. I mean, like, you know, the tough thing about saying this is the average salary in the NHL right now is around $3 million. It's tough to say that, you know, for, you know, working class stiffs like us, it's tough to say sometimes that somebody who's making an average salary of close to $3 million is not winning the negotiation battle. But there's no question the last two CBAs have brought more cost certainty for the owners than the players would like. You know, I think there are some things the players are looking at here that I think the league is willing to consider. They know the players' concerns about escrow. I think they spent a lot of time working at solutions. You know, this past season, you know, the NHL estimated the salary cap in December would be around $83 million and it ended up being shy of that. And it was bad for the teams. Like, it hammered some of these teams. And the players in the middle kind of get squeezed by it. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think I'm wondering if they're discussing, and I believe at some point it has come up, is do you set the salary cap earlier? Like, okay, so mm-hmm. instead of waiting until the end of June to announce a number for next year, do you take a look at what revenues were the year before, kind of make a bit of a projection, and set the salary cap earlier the season before? So, A, teams really have a much better idea of what they're looking at, and there's no surprises like they were this year. And I think for players, that would give them a better chance at estimating what the escrow payments could be instead of waiting until the last minute. I'm under the impression that that is one of the solutions to the problem that both sides have discussed.
Yeah, it's way later than the NBA. Mm-hmm. NBA and NFL have months in advance to budget their player spending, and the NFL is so complicated with player spending and guaranteed money.